Hi, Dominique, and welcome to another edition of The Week Ahead. I'm just realizing I am not skiing. It's just quite cold in London on Friday afternoon to timestamp this. So, how are you doing? How's everything?
Fine, thank you, Andrew. I thought you had an abstract painting as a decor, but no, it's just the zoom blurred background. It's good to be talking to you. Lots of stuff happening. So shall we get started?
Yeah, let's dig right in. So as we always like to do, let's recap events, speeches, kind of market reactions, your interpretation over the previous week or this past week.
So the Fed speeches. To me, what is really striking is how Fed speakers are still trying to jawbone the market. So, in other words, they haven't given up on forward guidance. I mean, the latest one is Goolsbee saying, the market may have put the cart before the horse on cuts. Why? This is really interesting. I think that because they would not dare to go against the market, in the sense that if the market price 50 in March, they will not dare to do less than 50. And you can see that. So when Goolsbee, is trying to moderate market expectation, it's because he wants to keep Fed policy optionality. So Goolsbee is one of the more obvious about it. The less obvious perhaps was Waller, who at the end of November gave us a speech where he made an off-the-cuff remark, a few more low prints and we can cut. So this week he was trying to correct the impression. He was all figures, his model, the data, very sober. But again, I think the underlying idea here is that they feel they have to validate market expectations. So they try to influence market expectations to keep their policy optionality. But the bottom line is that if you look at core inflation, it's falling like a stone. As we discussed before, the 6 months core PCE is 1.9%. There's a good chance that the next print next week is going to be about 15 basis points. So that would bring core PCE, 6 months core PCE, to 1.8%. So the risk of moving to the persistent low inflation they had before the pandemic are rising. So the bottom line is, they would like to keep the policy optionality, but it's all going to be about the numbers, and they can jawbone all they want. If the numbers are low, I think the market is going to price more cuts.
And I think I'm just to reiterate this question from myself, but also I know that clients asking is if we're on target to 2.25%, 2.5% growth, and core PCE, say over the last 6 months, is around like 1.6, 1.7, so under the target. You still think that there's a chance if growth is that strong for them to cut by 50 basis points? You don't, well, maybe update us on the percentages too, because it's your
Okay.
view is not 100%, just to
Sure,
clarify for everyone.
it's more balanced between 50 and 25. Where I have the strongest conviction is a cut as an insurance against low inflation, not against recession. And yeah, I've tweaked my probability a little bit. Now
Sure.
I'm at 50%, 50 basis point, 45%, 25, and 5%, no cuts.
Okay, so you're pretty close to balance between the two. And the reason you're saying that they wanted optionality, what you thought if the market is pretty much convinced on 25, then they kind of have to do 25. So you think their sweet spot would be for now, below 25, so they could still have the option of doing zero or 25. And obviously, then if it looks like the momentum, particularly from next week, is for this, we're entering this low inflation or continuing to head deeper into this potential low inflation, then they could, if the market starts pricing above 25, they're okay with that. Well, not okay, but
Well,
they'll
as I
stomach
said,
that. Because in
I will.
order, if there is a 45 or 50% chance they get to 50, there has to be a series of there has to be like a progressive way of getting there.
Sure. To me, the path to 50 would be two more low PC prints. And obviously, we have the seasonal adjustment to the CPI. Very interesting. Again, another sign that they are gearing up for something, for a cut in March, was Waller mentioning in his speech that the, I think they are published on Feb 9 or Feb 7, there will be an adjustment to the seasonality in the CPI, which last year made inflation look nowhere as good as the Fed thought. So he mentioned it as a key driver of his view on rates, which, you know, since this is early Feb data, this suggests that he's thinking of what would clear the runway for a March cut. So something, I think something is going to happen, which would make sense. I mean, to look at it from the Fed perspective, given that they think they have to push inflation to 2%. And given where inflation dynamics are, I mean, from their perspective, it would be logical to cut in March. To me, the question is more 25 or 50, which is going to be data dependent.
And the idea that the difference between core PCE and core CPI is, let's say, whatever, last 6 months, I don't know, like, is it almost 2% difference? Is it like 1.8 to 3.8? Or would you say 1.9 to maybe 3.8,
So
3.9?
on average, month for month, it's like 4 basis points. But the thing about this Fed, you know, they don't look at macro model because I think, and I'm quoting verbatim Powell, they think that U star, R star, Y star, these are unknowable in real time. So they are very focused on short-term inflation data. So that's what they react to. And much more on PCE than on CPI. In fact, in the minutes, the 6 months core PCE was explicitly listed as one of the drivers of the policy outlook. So they're quite clear on that.
Okay. Market reaction so far, I guess, between general risk, you know, the dollar and equities and rates, about what you think. You surprised how the market's reacting, and obviously what's being priced in into the rates market, to the front end rates
So
market.
it's a little bit like a flip-flop, right? I mean, I'm still I don't see. So I think where I differ from the market is that the market still sees a cut very much as insurance against recession, while I see it as insurance against lowflation. So each time we have strong prints, like the retail sales, for instance, the market lowers the risk
Yeah.
of a cut, which is fine. I mean, the Fed actually would like, as you said, the market to price a little bit less than a cut because it would give them optionality. But the bottom line is the risk of lowflation are real and they are growing. They will go up with a probably with the next PC print, with a PC print this week.
Okay, great. Okay, so let's turn our attention towards the week ahead. Yeah, what are the things people should look out for from a data, your central bank speeches, government, you know, I guess the election, anything that stands out, you know, that people should really focus on? And also that maybe there's a surprise coming.
So we already discussed core PCE. I mean, I'm thinking 15 basis point, which is close to the consensus of 0.2% unrounded. The other thing, the other data point that's coming, it's GDP, the first estimate of the fourth quarter. The consensus is 2%, which is a bit below the Atlanta Fed, 2.4%. Also, my expectation all along has been for slightly above 2% GDP, you know, based on the driver of consumption investment. So I think there is a bit of a scope for a positive surprise there, but not a huge one.
And I forgot, what was growth in Q3? It was like
4.9, I mean, close to 5%, but for very specific factors like the
right,
inventory
but some
cycle.
people, but the prevailing view was a lot of that payback was going to be in the next quarter. Like people, I think it started out the estimates were like almost zero or less than
Sure.
1%. I mean, it's unbelievable how strong the US economy still is.
Well, I mean, to me, it's all about the consumer and its strong balance sheet. So people have reacted to the inflation surprise by keeping their real consumption constant and letting the savings rate go down. And they are really unhappy, by the way, about that. If you look at the Fed surveys, two-thirds of the household surveys complain that inflation has forced them to change their consumption pattern, save less, or buy cheaper things. So they are unhappy, but they are able to do it because they have this strong balance sheet. So households that, you know, can't keep their consumption levels are borrowing more. And that's keeping the economy humming. You need a shock for this to change. So I continue to be very sanguine on growth, especially since, you know, we are talking about the demand side, but on the supply side of the economy, you have these low energy prices, and then you have all the migrant workers who have come in under the Biden administration who are keeping growth high and wages and inflation low, and probably going to help elect former President Trump. But that is another story, I guess. Okay, so we have also the monthly personal income and spending. And there again, I mean, I'm expecting a continuation of the story, which we've basically decent growth in both, which implies that the personal savings rate stays low. What else? New home sales, no mysteries there because we know more or less what the housing starts and the permits were, so it's easy to back out the sales. And then we have a slew of PMIs, the Richmond Fed, the S&P PMIs, the Kansas City Fed. So I know these are part of the Bloomberg calendar, but honestly, if you look at the relationship between growth and PMI, it's really moved away in part, and that's been documented by academic work because partisan politics are now really influencing people's perception of the economy. And then the usual jobless claim, and I'm afraid that there again we can't expect a market moving surprise. I mean, it's basically low. The labor market is strong, which is hardly surprising when growth is above trend. So that's for the data. In terms of political development, so we've just had an agreement in Congress about extending funding to the government until March. I think, you know, my expectation all along has been we would have a continued extension of government funding until the end of the year, essentially because in the past, government shut down, so fiscal brinkmanship has been negative for Republicans. We are in an election year. The big prize is to get Trump elected. And so why risk it by engaging in brinkmanship?
And then are any of the policy, like I was saying, like I don't know if they're increasing the money for child care or child tax credits or they're extending it. Are those big numbers and can that have an impact on the economy?
Yeah, no, we're talking about 70 billion
Okay.
in tax cuts, tax relief for small businesses and child tax credit increases. So in the grand scheme of thing, it's in a, you know, 24 trillion economy. It's not an enormous amount of money, but it shows that on both sides, there is no real drive for fiscal consolidation. And I guess that is a problem that comes with having the world currency. The budget constraint on the government is soft. And
Right.
so, you know, why not spend?
Okay. Anything else people should be thinking about, looking out for?
No, I mean, it's clear from the Iowa caucuses that President Trump, I mean, and that has been my view all along, is very likely to be the nominee. You know, onward and upwards, we've seen an uptick in betting odds of a Trump victory this week. And I'm going to put out an election dashboard, which I will update on a weekly basis. But that's where things stand.
Okay. Awesome. And then generally, like on risk and stuff, if inflation is relatively low and growth is holding up okay, and even slightly above trend, then the view, and like even if it looks like 25, obviously, you're continuing to, that's pretty positive environment for risk.
100%. I mean, we are basically back in the Goldilocks economy thanks to the positive supply shock. I mean, low inflation, high growth, this is super positive for risk, certainly US for US equities.
Okay.
So very, very constructive environment.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you. And then just a quick summary, as we like to do at the end of the call, just highlight a few professional pieces for professional clients. The Bereshit's Commodities Weekly, two key oil supply risks for this upcoming year. We continue to look for this rough range of kind of 70 to 85. Or 8250 even, and kind of play both sides of that range. We have a series of very active on the FX and EMFX trade ideas, which people should check out, including the Aussie CAD idea. John Tierney put out his monthly on credit and what's our views after a pretty significant run and really tightening in especially high yield credit, well, I guess both. Where we think from here, we have all our new trades ideas. Beige book sentiment is actually continuing to increase to get better after a long time of very negative sentiment coming from that. Obviously, you wrote some stuff about Trump 2.0 volatility ahead for the upcoming year. A lot of several new rates trade ideas, especially. Fading the sell-off in the UK front end from some stronger data, which we had actually been predicting, and using that as an opportunity to enter trades, which we have. And I mean, obviously, there's a whole bunch of stuff, a lot of correlation stuff, looking at dollar yen and more stuff across rates, emerging markets. Mirza, Caroline, and Liang have entered a whole bunch of new trades in EM. And getting some great feedback. I'll definitely check out everything in emerging markets. And for me, wish everyone, well, in this case, if you're watching it now, a great weekend or a great week ahead. And any parting thoughts from you?
Please keep the feedback going, especially negative feedback, and good luck, everybody. I think we're getting kind of a slow start to a year that is going to be very interesting.
Awesome. Cool. Thanks.